Thank you very much. It's nice to see such a crowd for poetry. I collected in this book most of the poems having to do with immigration and themes about immigration. The first poems that I'm going to read, since I've called the book The Bread We Ate, and where is the piece of paper with the... I don't see it. Oh, here it is. Okay. I'm going to read the poems having to do with bread first. This is called The Bread Wreath. When my sons were little, they wanted Wonder Bread instead of Italian, afraid to be different. Then they discovered that anything Italian was good, fashionable. And now they're grown up. They ask about the past, that other country, familiar and strange. And sometimes I tell them. On Sunday, my brother stopped by the bread works on the way over and bought us a colura to have with our dinner, still warm from the oven, deliciously fragrant, as only that kind of bread can be. As we broke it into pieces and passed it around the table, I told my children about the 7 wreaths of bread my mother gave to the poor on the anniversary of his death, to eat in remembrance of my father and of the 6 men who had died with him. The bread we ate did not have a name. Neither did the wheat we took to the mill, the flour the fornara made into dough at the community oven. She used a starter from an earlier batch, an inheritance received and passed on like a blessing. Mothers hugged the round loaves to their breasts and cut towards them. We kissed it to show respect, as we kissed our parents' hands in the morning, our fingers when crossing ourselves. I used a picture of my family on the cover, and the women in front are the older married women. This woman here is my grandmother, and this is my mother and my aunt. We have 4 generations of immigrant in our family, and my grandmother was the 2nd generation. Her grandparents, her parents had come first. I like to read a short poem that I wrote about my grandmother, who wore this very intricate costume and then had to take it off layer by layer and leave it behind before she came to the United States. Divestiture. She unpinned the folds of white linen, eloquent of place, loosened the loops and braided knots, and combed her hair into a bun. She untied her apron, took off one by one the pleated skirts, the black jacket with white velvet cuffs, the padded camisole, the long shirt, articulate with lace, then stepped into a dress, skimpier than a slip, and naked, exposed like that, my grandmother came to America. My mother and her sister were the 3rd generation, but her sister made it to America. My mother never did. Linens, plain weaves, twills, and herringbones, woven at home, linen on linen, linen on cotton. Some are still uncut, a band of warp threads separating one napkin, one towel from the other. but most are decorated with needlepoint lace. My mother's older sister had the broad back and strong constitution to bend for hours, working the pedals, arms stretching to send the shuttle scuttling through. My mother, the more delicate one, the one who wanted to get away, sat where the light fell on her hands, and pulling out the weft threads her sister had worked into a tight fabric, restructured the space with floss, white on white open work borders, arabesqued windows. Rough or fine textured, the linens I was saving were meant to survive soaking in hot water and ashes, milling on the rocks. I machine wash them, and when the weather is good, hang them outside, the way women still do over there, stretching them into shape while damp. Most are holding up well. A few show signs of wear, but not from use. It was keeping them safe in a trunk for so many years that weakened the fabric. And then we come to the fourth generation, which is, of course, my brother and me. And this is the pattern makers, is in the first person. I was at someone else's house, and my English wasn't too good. I didn't want to argue with a woman who felt I should use a pattern, regardless that anything but butterick, vogue, or simplicity was shoddy, makeshift. I had, and the skirt and zipper were too long. The darts fell in the wrong places. The ethnic types of five continents were supposed to fit into this pattern, modeled on someone 4 inches taller and flat in front and flat in back. As on a map, no rush hour traffic merging right and left, and no signs of closed bridges, one-way streets, angles sharp on paper that loop over and under and around. Besides, I knew another way. I had seen seamstresses and tailors take the measures off the living model and mark them straight onto the cloth, inventing a pattern or changing as they worked the one they'd learned. This one is from my brother, who told me after he read it that some people think that if you are a successful first-generation Italian, you must be a mafioso. Mafiosi. A man read a poem about how he walked into a restaurant in New York, and there they were, 7 mafiosi eating dinner together. They must have been regulars, he said, because no one paid attention. How did he know, I wondered. I can't tell, and I know about the mafia in Sicily, the 'Ndrangheta in Calabria, the Camorra in Naples. I come close to understanding their language, spoken and unspoken, their codes of silence. What was it, I wonder, silk suits or black shirts with white ties? Golf outfits? Tattoos on their arms like tong members? What sign did they wear? I don't suppose it was a leather jacket with the family name emblazoned on the back. Were they color-coded like gangs in L.A. or color-coded in some other way, the color of their skin, their hair, or were they eating spaghetti, drinking Dago Red, talking a mixture of English and Italian, gesturing with their hands, their chin? I like to know, a blue-eyed Italian from southern Italy, I thought they could look like just about anybody. I got hell from the Italian Americans for saying Dago in this poem. This was published in the Post Gazette. The bricklayers repaving the street near my house talk Italian as they work, a southern dialect. They're Abruzzesi, descendants of an ancient people who made roads and aqueducts for the Romans and paths that others would follow. I was a stonemason back home, the boss tells me, and I know that like my father and mother's father, he built houses for a living. He gives orders in Italian, and a young man answers in English. They're fathers and sons, in-laws and paisani. In the space they've opened between the curbs, they measure carefully from the middle to the edge, from the edge to the middle, matching new bricks with the old, blending the colors to look good. How much time do I have? 2 minutes, okay. The older couples, the older couples dancing at the Festa Italiana, how tenderly they hold each other as they make their courtly rounds around the floor, humming the tunes, songs from the 40s, 50s, 60s, the wooden planks and Station Square tent becoming a stately ballroom, marble and chandeliers, their motions a point, counterpoint, fluent in the language of the body. You know they danced the very first time they met over 50 years ago, and there they are doing it still. I read two more poems. This is Mushrooms. A strange efflorescence on the lawn where hidden roots and stumps lie below the surface. Was it the rain, the sun after rain, the red moon that caused such profusion? They glow in the morning in the silver blue of dusk, open and turn inside out in the bright midday sun, empty bowls held up to the sky. Split around the edges into odd-shaped petals. Smooth and rough, all covered with fragments of the universal veil. A few push up close to the ground without visible stipes, bronze and gold fluted leaves like coral of the woods, the color of regret. Edible agarics, or poisonous amanitas. I wish I knew. There was never a season, a gathering place. Our time together short. Dead in their 30s, or scattered widely across 2 continents, my people took this and other kinds of knowledge with them when they went. This is the last poem. It's called Reading the Names. For many years, I took a long, long walk in the morning, and I would often end up in the Mount Lebanon Cemetery and just walked in there. And pretty soon, images from the cemetery started creeping into my poems. This is one. I call this group the Graveyard Shift. Reading the names. Plain on polish, gray, pink, or black, the markers on the graves are as different in size, taste, or ambition as the people who erected them. Still, they're all lined up on the level field like pieces on a chessboard, players in a game, large groups turned in the same direction, as if waiting for a summons, a call to action. They faced their opponents, who faced them across a narrow lane, a number that never gets smaller, that grows closer together and more cosmopolitan with the years. A few at a time, over a long time, or just recently, new members have joined the oldest residents, Perfetti, Camizio, and Ciacciarelli, Jean, Wen, and Gonzalez. No matter how strange to read or difficult to pronounce, almost no one today changes his name to one or two Anglo-Saxon syllables. In 1976, several dozen Smiths went back to Kowalski. And I've heard announcer attempt a pure vowel, toss a singing octave, Chris, Frumata, Mahafala, into the homogenizing American air.